Welcome to Hub History, the show that brings you fascinating stories from Boston's history. This is episode one, Remember the 5th of November. Hi, I'm Jake.
And I'm Nikki. And this week, we're going to talk about a strange tradition in early Boston called Pope's Night. The story of Pope's Night reminds us how easy it has always been to get a good riot started in Boston, and also how strong anti-Catholic prejudice was in the early history of the colony. But before we talk about Pope's Night, let's take a look at what's coming up this week in Boston history.
Monday is Halloween, of course, and it's also the date in 1775 when John Adams and Josiah Quincy came up with a scheme to block Boston Harbor with sunken ships and trap the occupying British within. We'll have a link to Quincy's letter to George Washington and a copy of the map John Adams used to refine his plan in the show notes for today's episode.
Tuesday, November 1st, is the anniversary of Boston Female Medical College, which opened on November 1st, 1848. At the time, it was the world's first medical school for women, and today it's part of Boston University.
On November 2nd, 1993, Tom Menino was first elected as mayor of Boston. He'd been serving as the acting mayor since July, and he would serve as mayor until 2014, becoming the city's longest-serving mayor.
Thursday is November 3rd, and that's the day in 1718 when George Worthylake, his wife, one of his daughters, a slave, a white servant, and a friend all drowned in Boston Harbor while, tragically, the rest of the family watched from shore. Worthylake was the first keeper of Boston Light, and a young Ben Franklin wrote a poem called The Lighthouse Tragedy that he sold on the streets of Boston for change.
On November 4th, 1646, Massachusetts made it a capital crime to deny that the Bible was the literal word of God.
And Saturday, you can remember the 5th of November. Known in England as Guy Fawkes Day, November 5th was more commonly known as Pope's Day in early Boston, and that's what most of today's episode is going to be about.
And finally, Sunday marks the anniversary of Ted Kennedy's first election to the U.S. Senate in 1962 when he took over from JFK, and it's also the anniversary of their grandfather, Honey Fitz Fitzgerald's election to the Congress in 1894, which many would consider the founding of the Kennedy political dynasty. And now, remember the 5th of November. Nikki, can you tell us a little bit about Pope's Night in early Boston?
I sure can. So, Pope's Night, essentially, is the colonialized celebration of Guy Fawkes Day. Fawkes was an English Catholic who was involved in the Gunpowder Plot, which was a failed attempt to assassinate James I in 1605. Now, despite what the name Guy Fawkes Day suggests, Guy Fawkes is not actually the mastermind behind the plot. Robert Catesby should get credit for hatching a plan to assassinate the king by blowing up the House of Lords, but Fawkes was the one who was found guarding the gunpowder after a tip-off through an anonymous letter.
Speaking of anonymous, we'll come back to them later.
So, interesting tidbit here. Fawkes falls off the scaffold at his execution. He actually avoided the fate of being hanged, drawn, and quartered simply by clumsily falling off the scaffold and breaking his neck.
Which is probably the only circumstances under which breaking your neck is the best way to end the day.
It was definitely the better of the two options. Now, after the Glorious Revolution of 1688 put the British crown firmly in Protestant hands, the empire began celebrating Guy Fawkes Day as a great patriotic holiday. You know, thwarting the plot was seen as a great win over Catholicism. Bonfires, an effigy of Fawkes, fireworks are all used to mark the anniversary of the event, of course, by Protestants. Now, Boston is a city that has never needed much of a reason to riot. We could definitely dedicate a few months of podcasts just to the topic of rioting in Boston's history.
Yeah, today we riot over sporting events, Super Bowls, World Series, but we used to riot over things that mattered.
Yes, although Pope Day isn't exactly an example of political activism, at least not at first. And the other piece of it is that Boston is also a city that loves to have an enemy. It's really an us and them culture. Just countless examples over time, but in the beginning, Quakers. We We hate Quakers in Boston. We have the Quaker martyrs. We hate George III so much so that we have a revolution. In modern times, we hate the Yankees. You know, Yankees suck. So just et cetera, et cetera. Always, always.
We do digress a little bit.
We digress a little bit. Okay. Picture it. Boston, 1705-ish. Boston has two neighborhoods, the North End and the South End. And Pope's Day evolves into a dual purpose. It's an opportunity to celebrate anti-Catholic prejudices, which at that time are made all the worse by the Second Colonial War against France, which of course is a Catholic state. And it also allows the men in each neighborhood to continually up the ante in an ongoing rivalry, which, you know, is where that concept of the us and them comes into play. The North End and the South End residents celebrated by building parade floats, which got to be as large as 40 feet long, and there were two platforms. The upper platform served as a stage for these giant effigies that were built, the Pope, the devil, other political enemies, and they're controlled by men standing on the lower platform. Now, these puppets are translucent. You know, they're made from paper, and there are lanterns hung inside that make them glow. So given that we had no streetlights at that time, you can imagine that it would have been really creepy just to see this 10-foot-tall, glow-in-the-dark, animated devil rolling down the street at you, surrounded by this mob of unruly, drunk men. It's really not a night for women and children.
You know, it sounds a lot like floats we've seen in Chinese New Year's parades. Just instead of a festive dragon, you have a creepy devil.
Yes, but it is, you're right, it's that puppet style of parade festivities. Originally, the North End residents would wheel their float through their own neighborhood, while the South End did the same. And then the floats would meet, and they would peacefully pass each other on the Hanover Street Bridge, and then they would tour the other neighborhood. And they'd stop in front of the homes of the wealthy residents, and they'd collect a tax, if you will, to cover the cost of the festivities. But it would also help that property owner make sure that everything stayed safe that night. And then eventually they return to their own neighborhoods, and they will burn their effigies in a bonfire, and, you know, they feast, and of course, they're continuing to drink throughout the night. But by the 1740s, things start to get a little contentious. After the parades, the revelers would then compete to see who could kidnap the opposing pope first. So a very sinister capture the flag, if you will. It's a capture the pope. But winning the right to bring it back to their home turf and to burn it. And as the festivities grow more and more out of control each year, it just devolves into this excuse for these gangs to get drunk, run through the streets, and beat each other. So taking the fun a little too far is also a theme in Boston's history, and I think anyone who lives near Fenway Park today can tell you that. So what happened to Pope's Night? Why don't we see people celebrating Pope's Night in 2016?
Well, first of all, Boston's a very Catholic city these days.
Yeah, and we could definitely do a show about that transition at some point, but we're still a city that really likes to riot.
Of course we are. But in the end, the American Revolution is really what brings Pope's Night celebrations, if you will, to a close. 1765 was the beginning of the end. Historian J.L. Bell wrote a series about Pope's Night 1765 on his blog last year, and in 1765, Pope's Night comes on the heels of several months of protests and, of course, rioting over the Stamp Act.
And for those who may not remember, the Stamp Act was a tax on the colonies that the Patriots were very much against. This is where we get that saying, no taxation without representation.
And you get that saying largely from Boston, because Boston's a hotbed of resistance against the Stamp Act. Already in the summer and the early fall of 1765, we had Named a Liberty Tree, protested in the streets, and we had destroyed the houses of some crown officials like Governor Thomas Hutchinson. The year before, Pope's Night had gotten so wild that a young boy was crushed to death, and patriot leaders like the Sons of Liberty were worried that frivolous mob violence would detract from the seriousness of their Stamp Act protests.
Which, as an aside, that's a very Bostonian concern, that our fun riots would interrupt our serious riots.
They don't do that other places?
I don't think so.
Patriots get together with the leaders of the North and the South End crews, and they worked out a deal. This time, when the two crews and their floats meet, they end up joining together into one huge parade. They go out and they get drunk underneath the Liberty Tree, and then they parade together to Copp's Hill, and they all burn their effigies as one big party.
It's a very touching story of community and togetherness.
And drunken revelry, of course. So the uncontrolled violence of Pope's Day was already on the decline in the 1760s and the 1770s, as it becomes more associated with political resistance to Parliament. But in the end, it was George Washington who put the last nail in the coffin of Pope's Night.
So let's set the scene again. Now it's 1775, the revolution has started, and we've had the battles at Lexington and Concord and Bunker Hill, and the British army is really locked up tight in the siege of Boston.
That's right, and that summer George Washington has come to Cambridge and taken command of what's soon going to be known as the Continental Army. Now, Washington's from Virginia, and the Virginians don't have the same historic anti-Catholic bias that New England Puritans did. So George Washington looks at Pope's Night as a backward custom and as a threat to military discipline. Not only that, but he had just dispatched his trusted colonel, Benedict Arnold, on a mission to Canada to open up a new front against the British and to win hearts and minds amongst the French Canadians. And the thing about French Canadians, at that time at least, is that they're very Catholic. So they wouldn't be too pleased to hear about anti-Catholic riots back in Boston. So in his orders for November 5th, 1775, Washington makes it clear that if anybody in the army around Boston celebrates Pope's Night, heads are gonna roll. I'm going to read from his orders from that day. Quote, "As the commander-in-chief has been apprised of a design formed for the observance of that ridiculous and childish custom of burning the effigy of the Pope, he cannot help expressing his surprise that there should be officers and soldiers in this army so void of common sense as not to see the impropriety of such a step at this juncture. At a time when we are soliciting and have already obtained the friendship and alliance of the people of Canada, whom we ought to consider as brethren embarked in the same cause, the defense of the general liberty of America. At such a juncture and in such circumstances, to be insulting their religion is so monstrous as not to be suffered or excused. Indeed, instead of offering the most remote insult, it is our duty to address public thanks to these, our brethren, as to them we are so much indebted for every late happy success over the common enemy in Canada."
So Washington really has a way with words, huh? I mean,
yeah.
Ridiculous and childish custom, void of common sense. You know, you don't want to be the person who's on the receiving end of this order.
Yeah, definitely strong language. Monstrous, should not be suffered or excused. You don't want to get on the wrong side of George Washington. So we kill off the Pope's Night tradition right at the very beginning of our revolution. Then the nation's busy fighting Britain for years to come. We forge an alliance with France, and Pope's Night never returns.
Which isn't to say that Boston suddenly throws open its arms to Catholicism. I mean, there are still plenty of anti-Catholic bias right up until the early 20th century.
And I can think of at least three separate anti-Catholic riots that took place after the Revolution. But those will have to wait for a future show.
Definitely the Ursuline Convent. I want to do a show about that.
And maybe the Broad Street Riot.
Yeah.
In England, part of the celebration of Guy Fawkes Day involved wearing a papier-mâché mask of Fawkes. The movie V for Vendetta brought that back as a symbol of protest against authority. And these days, you're most likely to see a mask like that on members of the hacking group Anonymous. Told you we'd bring it back to Anonymous. Now, the show Mr. Robot, you see a fictional hacking group that's sort of a takeoff of Anonymous, and they're using a fictional but very similar mask.
So where can people find out more about Pope's Night in early Boston?
We'll post a woodcut image of a Pope's Night float, as well as a link to the original broadside Extraordinary Verses on Pope Night, which was published in Boston in 1768, in the show notes for this week's episode at hubhistory.com/001. We'll also have a link to George Washington's orders from November 5th, 1775, which banned any Continental soldiers from burning an effigy of the Pope.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can go to hubhistory.com and click on the Contact Us link, or email us at podcast@hubhistory.com.
We're on Facebook at facebook.com/hubhistory, and our Twitter handle is @hubhistory.
That's all for now. We'll see you next week.